Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 10 of Shoeforia, the podcast where footwear myths are made and busted. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Simon Barthold, your host for today. I really hope that you will subscribe, like, share, review our little podcast with all your friends. Please go to www.bartholdclinical.com, and if you like what you see, then you can join our happy little band. You can also get tons of great free information from our pages on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and, of course, LinkedIn. It's a great privilege for me today to be speaking with an old friend, really, but someone who's achieved so much in an incredible running career. I'm talking about an Olympic medalist, the American record holder in the marathon, the holder and champion of the women's road 10 mile, the women's road 15K, and the women's road 8K, voted in 2006 the best women's marathoner in the world by Track and Field News. She is a long-term ASICS-sponsored athlete and now an ASICS ambassador. I'm speaking today to the wonderful Dina Castor, all the way from Mammoth Lakes in the USA and California. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things, but Dina is absolutely famed for her mental strength in running. In fact, she's written a book on that, which I'll discuss during the course of the podcast. I'll also be talking about how she deals with injury over the years. And also, of course, we can't escape talking about shoes because that's what Shoeforia is all about. We'll be taking a bit of a glimpse inside Dina's thoughts on the new super shoes, and also a little of a peek at what she thinks is one of the reasons why we see this rise of the great African runners. Thank you so much for joining me, Simon Barthold, your host on Shoeforia, episode 10. I know you're going to love it. Please welcome Dina Castor. You're listening to the Shoeforia podcast by Barthold Clinical. Listen in as we delve deep into the world of evidence-based sports science, sports medicine, and athletic footwear science. Let's go and bust some myths. Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to Shoeforia, the podcast where footwear myths are made and broken. And I'm absolutely delighted to have with me this morning someone who can only be called a running legend. I have with me Dina Castor, all the way from Mammoth Lakes in California. Beautiful place. Dina, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
Actually, this afternoon, your time. So Dina's living in Mammoth Lakes. It's not a bad place to be holed up during this COVID pandemic we're dealing with. Dina, how's it all going there?
It's going as good as can be expected. We have to be creative with our days so it doesn't get too mundane, but we're used to that in marathon training also, that you try to keep it exciting and throwing in some splashes of creativity so that we don't get too bored and locked down.
Well, all you have to do is look out your window, Dina, at that incredible mountain view you have, and that should lift your spirits, I would have thought.
A lot of times I just look out the window during homeschooling in particular and just take a deep breath.
Yeah, it's a challenge being at home with a 10-year-old and making sure that's all going well. I sympathize there. We've done an introduction for you, but just for the listeners, I just want to run through it. Just a couple of the achievements you've managed, and the list is long, but currently, you are the American record holder for the marathon with a time of 2:19:36. You also hold the American records for the women's road 10 mile, the women's road 15K, the women's road 8K. You're a bronze medalist in 2004 in Athens, and what you don't know is I was there and I saw that. And in 2006, you were named the best women's marathoner in the world by Track and Field News. Listen, that's a fair way from Waltham, Massachusetts, where you grew up. Tell us a little bit about that journey.
There were a lot of miles adding up in there to reap those rewards of hard work and discipline and persistence and being resilient when I've disappointed myself, had a failed race. So a lot of that big growth and big accomplishments came on the tails of some pretty devastating races.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you've written a book, which I'll shamelessly plug here because I have actually read it, and it's a terrific read. And it's called Let Your Mind Run, the memoir of thinking my way to victory. And I know that you are You're well known in running circles for being mentally very tough and strong. I'd be interested in your comments on how that has really defined your running and helped you through those tough moments.
Yeah, I think it's more of in the early parts of my career, dabbling with my perspective and attitude in the middle of a hard run and realizing to be frustrated and emphasize fatigue served me no good. But if I could look up at the mountain views, if I could appreciate and be grateful for the miles that are behind me and the ones ahead, that really fueled me physically. And then when I got into researching the science of it all, realizing that frustration and fatigue and disappointment release cortisol in your body and really make you ineffective and foggy in your mind and ineffective physically. And also seeing that when we focus on gratitude and optimism and opportunity, that our body releases the better hormones like oxytocin and serotonin and really fuel us and allow us to reach our potential. The upside of that is I was playing with these things over the years, playing with my mentality for performance, and found that it really did lead to a more fulfilling life as well.
Yeah, look, I think that's a really interesting point. A lot of people who are listening to this podcast will not be runners. Some will be, but a lot will be based in clinical sports medicine, and they may not have quite the appreciation of what a balancing act it is to be an elite athlete, especially at the very pointy end which you're at. It really does require a titration of every little nuance of what you do with training, with lifestyle, with sleep, with nutrition, all those sorts of things, doesn't it? And you're bringing up an interesting point about the mental aspect of it and how you can manipulate or exploit that or benefit in racing. I think that's a very important point.
I could go in and just focus on the couple of hours I'm in my running shoes each day, but if I could live my entire lifestyle with my goals in mind, then it helps support my time in my shoes. So I would say even for people that have 9-to-5 jobs or have to clock in and clock out, the better you can take care of yourself and set yourself up for a successful workday the next day, despite not being on the clock and getting paid for it, you're going to have more effective time while you're sitting at your desk at work.
Yeah. So for everybody who's sitting here listening to this at their desk or in their car, just make sure you fit in that time for exercise. You only need half an hour. That's all you need to give up in your day. And if you can't find that, then you need to restructure your life, basically.
Yeah.
Dina, you're actually the first Olympian and certainly the first Olympic medalist that I've spoken to. So you won the bronze medal in the marathon in 2004. I've been to 4 Olympic Games now, and it's just it's a special privilege to go even in my capacity. But what's it like to be there as an athlete?
Gosh, you know, I feel that sport really does bring people together peacefully. I mean, we're at war when the gun goes off and until the finish line breaks across our chest or until we reach the finish line. But it really is a sense of pride to represent your country and also see how much you have in common with the rest of the world. So it is a unifier as much as it is a very competitive couple of weeks in the middle of the summer. So I think it's a beautiful reference that sports can give. It's that we might be vying for the same job and the same place, but we are so much more alike than we are different. And the Olympic experience really brings that out because you're in this village with athletes of different sports, but from also every country in the world. And that is a beautiful feeling, the pride of representing your country, but also the intimacy of having so much in common with people from around the world.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I was very lucky in 2000 that I was in the village. And apart from being amazed after the closing ceremony that the Canadian team managed to somehow hijack the village fire engine and mount a full-size stuffed moose on its roof.
Those shenanigans happen very often, yes.
Well, one of the things that really impressed me is that the medalists, with great pride and quite rightly, wore their medals around the village, and just how many other athletes stopped just to congratulate them and chat with them. And it was a very nice sort of feeling to witness all of that. It was terrific.
Yeah, and Simon, now, did you say 2000 you were in the village?
In 2000 in Sydney, yep.
That was the best games ever. That really was. They did such an amazing job hosting, and the opening and closing ceremonies will never be beat by any other country. I thought they were fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's a great recommendation coming from you. It was an incredible time, and there was certainly of the four I've been to, there's certainly a special vibe about that. Dina, obviously you and I met first many years ago through your association, your long and ongoing association with ASICS, and you've been such an incredible ambassador for ASICS, both as an athlete and as a person. Tell us a little bit about that association with this very famous footwear company.
Yeah, I mean, what a privilege. I feel like you're family, Simon, because we've been around the world together and certainly been at some really fun events together. So I would always say yes to you when you're asking me to chat and do something, some sort of collaboration. But I've had this relationship with ASICS for more than 20 years now, and it was me running for another footwear company when I was at my future husband's parents' house in Ohio, and my shoes were slipping all over the towpath that went through that connected the cities. And I just told him, like, if I'm going to run here, I need to go to a run specialty store and get in a shoe that better grips the ice and snow. And so we went to this local run specialty store, and I told the guy, his face dropped when I said to him, I want to try on like up to 10 pairs of shoes and just see what feels best. And he was like, oh my gosh. So I said, I promise I'll buy a pair. And he came back with his head hidden behind this tower of boxes and put them down. And the very first shoe I tried on was the ASICS DS Trainer. And I felt like it was this light shining down on me moment that shoe felt like it was made for my foot. I bought the shoe and I called my agent, Ray Flynn, who's actually still the Irish national record holder in the mile after all these years. I called him and said, I really want to run for this shoe company. Can you look into it? And so he was looking into it. And while he was looking into it, I was doing research on the company itself to find out that ASICS is a Latin acronym for Anima Sana in Corpore Sano, or a sound mind and a sound body. And I thought, is this the perfect fit or what? The foundation of this company is my life mission, how to get in sync my mind and body to reach my potential. So I called Ray back and I said, I don't even care if I take a major pay cut in this, which no agent wants to hear, of course, because their livelihood depends on it too. So while he was negotiating, I was anxious to hear from him to find out that I was going to start a relationship with them. And so even after 20 years, I had a little hiatus with the shoe. I didn't like some of the tweaks in it for a couple of years, but one of the shoes that is always in my rotation is the DS Trainer because it's light and nimble, it's fast, and sometimes I want it for a long tempo run, and other times I want it just because I'm feeling sluggish and I want to feel lighter and faster. So I use it for both reasons.
Yeah, it's the DS Trainer is definitely in my top three ASICS shoes of all time. I think that it has been a wonderful shoe. As you say, one of the secrets of the running shoe world is that occasionally you do get, in the industry, we very unkindly call them bush pigs, but every now and then you do get a shoe that just has been fiddled with too much and it doesn't work. And so you have to sit it out for a season, for a half year until the new one comes along. But normally those things get sorted out. It's a fabulous story, and I think this must be almost a record for longevity of an elite athlete being involved with a brand. What's your affiliation with ASICS these days, Dina?
So I still have in my contract performance bonuses and everything, but I'll never reach them. It's like if you win an Olympic gold medal and then in this 4-year cycle, you're gonna get this X amount of money. So I can pretty much ignore that page of my contract with performance bonuses because I still go out and run and race and like to do it hard. I feel like when I continue to push myself physically and mentally, I continue to keep a strong physical and mental state. And I don't want any of that to atrophy. I want to always be ready to handle adversity and challenge. And running allows me to do that. Keep it on the back burner in case I need it. But a lot of what I do for them is going to run specialty stores and visiting with their clients. I go to some of their influencer events to give talks. I go to group runs and really just travel around the country when they need me to do something on their behalf. I feel like it's so easy for me to represent the brand in a positive and authentic way because I truly do appreciate and admire not just the founding principles of a sound mind and a sound body that Mr. Onitsuka started when he created the company after World War II to try to get more camaraderie and people rising out of the devastation and depression that that war caused them. He believed that if you got out and you exercised, that it made you a not just a fitter person, but a better person. And it's really stunning to me to see how those principles are still so strong in the company to this day, that all of their staff and senior management really do live those principles out. And so I really find it very easy to represent them.
Yeah, well, I think you might have that contract for the rest of your days, Dana, because you're just such an adornment to the company. I mean, I can say this very sincerely that I, over the years, I've come into contact with many, many elite athletes, and I've never known anybody who's more accessible and, frankly, nicer than you, Dana. So,
host you are.
Now, listen, I want to follow up on that. And so tell me, did you ever, and this might be confidential, I don't know, and if it is, then tell me so, but did you ever have shoes that were specifically made for you? Did you have footwear bespoke manufactured?
When the World Championships were in Edmonton, Canada, their master shoemaker flew in from Kobe. And I didn't know you could take so many measurements of a foot. He did like the circumference of every toe and the length of every toe and the width of my foot at different segments and the height of my arch at different points. I mean, he filled pages and pages of Japanese characters just on measuring one foot. And then he did my right foot. And then he did them all over again just for precision. Like, he was so precise. And then about a couple months went by and I got some custom made shoes. They're pretty incredible. They're made out of recycled materials because they knew that I was sensitive to the environment and wanted something that was environmentally friendly. So they're made out of recycled rice husks. And I love the shoes. They were light and fast. I still have them today. I don't wear them. They're just kind of archived in our garage. But they were fantastic shoes. And I actually ended up breaking the world record in the 5K at the Carlsbad 5000. It was Paula Radcliffe's record. She had beaten me the week prior at the World Championships in cross country. So she was first and I was second. And then the following weekend in Carlsbad, I set out to retaliate and broke her world record in the 5K on the road. So those shoes were pretty light and amazing, but they were a shoe that couldn't be worn with too many miles on them.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. I can't remember that. I know exactly who you're talking about. I can't remember his name, but he's kind of like Mr. Miyagi out of the Karate Kid.
He had to retire because in Japanese culture, when you hit 65 after you have had tenure at a corporation, it is, etiquette to step down and let somebody else take over.
Yeah, okay, so I'm in big trouble then, really, but So, well, that's very interesting, you know, especially given the current sort of status with footwear, which we'll touch on in a minute. But I'm actually quite interested to talk to you a little bit about injury and what you've dealt with over the years and how you've managed that. So I know obliquely that you have had a few injury issues, as every elite athlete has. Mm-hmm. Just run us through that a little bit, Dana, what you had to deal with.
Yeah, I feel fortunate that in the longevity of my career, I haven't had to deal with a lot of injury. I think the only one that wasn't something stupid that I did was leading up to the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, Australia. I was racing so much on the track and doing so many track workouts throughout the week. I think I was spending a little too much time in spikes in 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters and 3,000 meters. And in between those races, I was jumping on the track to increase my speed, the pop off the ground. So I think I just overdid it in spikes that summer. That was my fault. My only other two injuries had to do with rolling my foot over a pine cone while walking the dog and having to sit out for a while. And then in the 2008 Olympic Games, breaking my third metatarsal. And that was due to a severe vitamin D deficiency that didn't allow calcium to absorb into my bones. So I actually had a very weak osteoporosis at a very young age. And so realizing that I had to get vitamin D nutritionally instead of through the sun. So now to this day, I still focus on getting vitamin D. through nutrition, free range eggs, organic leafy greens, pickled herring. So a few of the ways that I get it. And I really do attribute being injury free for so long to two things. One is I emphasize rest and recovery very heavily. I take long breaks after goal races. My easy days are very easy so that my hard days can be hard and aggressive, but also because I rotate shoes all the time. I'm in 3 completely different styled shoes throughout the week, from the DS Trainer to the Nimbus to my new favorite is this Nova Blast that came out that's super light materials, but ultra cushiony. So those 3 shoes, and they couldn't be structured more differently, but I do that so that my feet stay awake and alive and no muscles get in a rut or turn off and all those intrinsic muscles and tendons and bones get flexed and worked in different ways. And I really think that that's kept me healthy over the years.
There's 3 really important take-home messages there. The first one is for any aspiring, especially female endurance athletes, you really do have to be very aware of bone health. So that's something that you really do need to be on top of. The second one, of course, is rotation and mixing up your signals. I mean, you're lucky where you are that you have options to run trails and things like that, and you don't have the same repetitive load, but those things are super important for athletes. And the third thing, I can't even remember what it was, but it was important, I can assure you.
I remember when I lived in Arkansas that I would run on different sides of the road just so that I wasn't getting used to the same camber all the time and that I wasn't tilting and putting stress on one hip rather than the other. But you're right. I haven't thought of that in a very long time because I live in a place that I can get on single track trails, wide dirt roads, pavement, the track. So I feel fortunate that the terrain kind of mixes things up for me as well.
That's a really good point. You know, I often say to people when they ask me, why do people get injured running? And I say, well, it's because they get up in the morning, pull their shorts on, go outside the front door, and they always turn right and they never turn left. So they're always running on in the same direction, on the same camber. You know, it's interesting you talk about Sydney, the Olympic Games and the practice track there. That has a great memory for me because I went out running on that track with a great mate of mine, Michael Kinchington, and we were powering along and we got overtaken by a couple of race walkers, which tells you a story about our athletic prowess. We really did. Now, the whole landscape of distance running has changed in the last 30-odd years. Your achievements are amazing. We've seen this this real rise to prominence of the African runners. What's your thoughts on the status of that at the moment? So they're kind of dominating the situation now, aren't they?
Right. And in a big way. I mean, I feel like the East Africans have always dominated in the distance race and there's kind of been these outliers that have come along and disrupted the podium a little bit, but they've always been good, but now they're good in record-breaking ways, race after race, year after year. It's phenomenal to see. It's phenomenal to witness what the human potential is. And I think that there's other things involved in that. I think it's motivation, the motivation to bring money home and really make a difference in their village. Money has never been a motivator for me, but I feel lucky that I was raised in a supportive household that it didn't need to be my sole focus. But you can't underestimate the power of a paycheck that goes so far when they are bringing it home to their villages. So their motivation is going to be very different from my motivation of running fast. But it is extraordinary to see. I'll say that with Kipchoge breaking 2 hours in the marathon, I don't think that counts yet. I know it was him that did it, but I would like to see someone and celebrate them in a very big way, be at a major marathon on a certified course, breaking that 2-hour barrier under the rules and regulations of the sport. I think that is going to be a day where I'll certainly be cheering loudly.
Yeah, I think we were all really looking forward to Tokyo and seeing Kipchoge and Bekele perhaps line up in that race and just seeing what might have eventuated there. And I celebrate the achievement and I watched it live and, you know, it did blow me away. But like everybody, it raised a number of questions for me about what I was witnessing, not necessarily because I thought the shoes were such a big issue, but because of the thing that really stood out for me was his lack of fatigue at the end of a marathon, right, where where he basically ran 17-second 100-meter splits for 42.2 kilometers was insane. Was pretty crazy. Yeah.
I do think on the days that I've run personal best, I have felt my best also. And then the days that have been more of a struggle and I fell short of my goal have looked a lot uglier. So I think there's something to say for the endorphins and everything he might have felt knowing that in those final miles that it was in his grasp. I think that might have played into his jump. He was probably, I would anticipate he was pretty sore the next day.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting you say that. I mean, I always, when I think about people breaking marathon records, I always have a mental image of Ryan Hall looking like he's about to drop dead as he goes over the finish line. Yeah. Which he has done on a few. He's a co-inhabitant of Mammoth Lakes with you guys, isn't he? He and Sarah live up there, I think, don't they?
They used to live here full time, and now they have moved to Flagstaff, Arizona.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. That's quite a big change. Yeah. So, listen, we can't finish this conversation without touching briefly on the new so-called super shoes and what's being called the arms race in athletic footwear. Of course, Nike sort of carry the flag at the moment, and they've been the pace setters with the 4% and the family of shoes that have come afterwards, the next percent, the Alphafly. From an athlete's perspective, I hear varying opinions about all this, some positive, some quite negative. Sarah Hall's certainly been quite vocal in her position on this. What are your thoughts, Dina? I mean, you have represented an athletic footwear company. You've had a longitudinal time span of wearing all sorts of different shoes. Now this is sort of landing in the sport. What are your thoughts?
I'm definitely conflicted. One day I can support it, and the next day I'm arguing with myself. So I believe that shoes have been advancing in technology year after year. It's what makes the newest models the best ever and why you need to have them. And I actually believe that my shoes that I ran, my American record, were better than the shoes that Joan Benoit Samuelson ran in when she earned her record. So I'm pretty sure that the person that's coming up that's going to break my American record is going to be in shoes that are more technologically advanced than what I was running in. Where I have the problem with it, I know that carbon plates are in there and having a positive effect. The foam and the materials that go into it that are light and spongy and fast. And if we're going to talk Kipchoge, then there were springs in his shoes. So I joke, I actually am like facetious in saying, are we going to get away with having little fans that keep our feet cool in the back of our shoes? And oh, the jet propulsion isn't really that big. It's just mostly to keep your foot cool when you're running. Is that going to be the next model of shoe that we see? Where I don't want to see this go is that the shoe is giving more to the person than their actual fitness. Like, a shoe should support you. It shouldn't do the work for you. And I think that therein lies where my crux is that, can we really scientifically show that these shoes aren't doing the work and springing you forward, making your stride longer? Because if your stride, I remember Coach Vigil saying this, and I am not getting the exactness right. He said something along the lines of, if you could open your stride up, get more powerful is what he was wanting me to do, get my legs more powerful in the weight room. If I could extend my stride by a quarter of an inch, that would add up to 3 seconds a mile. And those 3 seconds a mile could, so if these shoes are extending someone's stride, giving them less ground contact time and getting them in the air and propelled forward more, if that is giving them seconds in the run that don't have to do with getting in the gym and working out and getting their muscle power, if that work is being done by the shoe, I would say that the shoe, I think one of the terms that I heard is performance enhancing materials. And I go back to 2008. Do you remember the Olympics in 2008, how swimming had those body suits with the neoprene and polyurethane, and it kept the swimmers more buoyant, but they also had grooves in them, which allowed them to get in sync with the water molecules more. And every world record in those Olympics were broken and allowed to stand. But a year later, they banned all the bodysuits because they realized that it was actually giving a competitive advantage to anybody who wore them. And then where does that stop?
Yeah, it's a hornet's nest, really. It's very, very difficult to know. I mean, I certainly don't expect you to comment on this, but just for anybody listening, it's one of the things that does concern me is not so much about the footwear, but when I look at some of the time differentials within individual athletes. So, you know, for example, I'm aware of some athletes who might have had a PB of 220 who are then churning out a 208 or a 207. Wonder whether the shoes are actually acting as a bit of a smoke screen for other things. And that's something we probably do have to be a bit vigilant over, because there's only a certain amount the shoe can achieve. And it might be a lot. We think that the advantage of the Nike range is between 4 and 8%, which are very big numbers. People might look at that and say, 4% is not much. But a 4% energetic advantage in a marathon is a massive number, and 8% is parabolic. So, you know, I'm not prepared quite yet to say that these things are EPO for the feet. I think that the athletes still have to be able to exploit them, but I think your points are very well taken.
So, say that is a longtime supporter of the ASICS brand, and they've had their Meta Racer out for a couple of years. I've been running in it for 2 years, and certainly felt the first thing I said to their marketing manager when they sent me a test run, a couple test pairs, and I went to the track and ran in them. I said, wow, these actually work for you. Like that was my very first thought was like, these shoes were pushing me forward.
Yeah, it's a very unusual sensation when you first put them on, because they're so different, and they're actually, some of them are actually quite difficult to walk in, but they really only start, you can really only start to make them work when you run in them. It's an interesting experience. Dina, I promised I'd only keep you for half an hour, and we're a little bit over that now. So I just want to say thank you so much for your time. I have one burning question I have to ask you, because we have a very common interest here, and that question is, what's the best red wine you've had recently?
Oh my gosh. So we actually had a nice day. I'm drinking a rosé, but it's time for rosé in my house. You're still drinking coffee right now.
Exactly.
But I actually went on a Italian wine tour virtually the other day, where you had to order the wines ahead of time. So I ordered them online and they were shipped to my house, and I got to do a little Italian wine tour. So we sampled wines from Sicily and then all the way up towards the Northern Appalachians. And it was really extraordinary to see the difference of the grapes from such a warm coastal region all the way up to the hill country near Torino. So it was a really fun tour of Italy.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Not so fun.
the Nero d'Avolo from Sicily, they're some of my favorite wines. So there are two things we have to do when the pandemic is finished. I have to come to Mammoth Lakes and have a glass of wine with you, and you have to let me into your garage to see this collection of shoes you've got.
You've got it. You can get into our wine cellar and choose whatever you want to open, and then we'll look at shoes over a glass of wine.
Oh, that's you shouldn't be saying that to me. That's a very risky thing to say. Dina Castor, thank you so much for your time. It's been lovely to chat with you, and thank you so much for all of your insight into what's been a wonderful career, what is a wonderful career. Never say never about those races. You never know. You might just pull one out one day soon. We'll see. So thank you, Dina, and stay safe over there, and hopefully we'll catch up.
Thank you, Simon. It's always great getting together and chatting with you, and give my love to your family.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us for the Shoe Forerunner podcast by Bartold Clinical. Join us next time.